gotta find them first.
Okay, there we go. This first one's called Today. Today was a bad day. I woke up, felt like I didn't sleep at all. Forced myself out of bed to answer the grindstone's call. Today was a bad day. Today was a sad day. I am worthless. I saunter along without meaning, cause, or purpose. Today was a sad day. Today was a mad day. Aggression boils, tells me to kill and maim friends, family, buildings, myself. It's all the same. Today was a mad day. Today was a good day. I made it through the job I can't stand. I didn't fall to end it all. Nothing was destroyed by my hands. Today was a good day. This one's called The Nun and the Priest. Shh, quiet now. Despite passion, I spelled that word wrong, sorry. Despite passion so bold, so loud. There we go. Shh, quiet now. Despite passion so loud. My heart screams, trapped by my chains, rosary beads. Can I confess to myself, this crucifix is a noose? How can true love be immoral? How can pure love be damning? I vow to love God alone, but by loving you, closer to Him I've grown. But if I must go to hell, to you, my soul, I will sell. This one's more funny, because the other two are kind of heavy. I smell. I'm not ashamed. It's just fact. It's not for lack of baiting, for I do every day. But in truth, I do smell, I must say. Don't laugh, but look in and have a think. Do you bring others in or repel them with what you do? Look around at your friends and maybe realize that you smell too.
Thank you, Daniel. Next up, we have Con O'Donnell.
Thank you. I was away recently and I met a girl and she told me about some of her pastimes. It was very interesting. She's into live action role playing, and this is a poem just I wrote after speaking to her, and I call it The Madhouse. It's funny how there are things going on that we have absolutely no idea about, that if we did know about, we'd be interested enough in to take the time to find out all about. Take one such occurrence that I was informed of quite recently, that of the act of live action role playing, or LARPing. My confidant let be known to me that she and a gaggle of similar soul-starved souls took possession of a disused mental hospital and proceeded over the course of a long weekend to pretend to be various patients, orderlies, doctors, nurses, quacks, jacks, hacks, bums, scums, and nearly runs, hunkies, junkies, and flunkies, and pay good money to do it too, with various logistical overheads, underheads, and underbed costs associated in relocating their sound bodies and minds to a provincial town in Denmark, where this said event unfolded. It is said that they laughed and cried openly, wept knowingly, conducted congenial exorcisms ignorantly, so instead of gods of air and darkness, castigated themselves in velvet splendor, wading in purgatory's wading pools, qualifying for neither heaven nor hell. But I don't give a damn about all that. I do, however, admire the shadowy figure in the background, with a well-developed sense of irony, pulling the strings and having a hell of a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin. Next up, could we have Nick Smith?
This might be a little long, like my father. He was a big man. He measured over 6'3" and weighed as much, but his hero's stature was stunted, his shoulders rounded by the burdens of several lifetimes. Now he lay, almost unburdened. He smiled at the two visitors who rested their hands on the footboard of his bed, one short, the other tall. confronted with the transient, their fingers shuffled for something solid to grip. Pleasantries were exchanged, nice day, nice house, nice life, then silence. The clock ticked on the mantelpiece in the living room below. Eventually he spoke. He was good at removing the awkwardness of others. "You'll have trouble getting me out of here," he said, laughing, with a wicked glint in his one remaining eye. The undertaker smiled benignly and made mental notes. The assistant, an uncouth rock of a man, rubbed his hands together as if with anticipation. I half expected him to spit in them. After more talk of little consequence, their unusual visit had reached its inevitable conclusion, and they bade my father farewell. They would meet again later. We shuffled out of the bedroom and onto the landing. The assistant paused at the top of the narrow stairs that twisted their descent to the hallway below. He shook the landing rail. It wobbled gently, like a loose tooth. "Does this come apart?" he asked hopefully. I said no, it would be a bit of an inconvenience. The two men irreverently wound their way noisily downstairs, forgetting the true purpose of their unusual visit. They made their way along the hallway to disappear through the front door into blinding sunlight, as if to their paradise. I could hear my father chuckling upstairs as his dying weight grew heavier by the hour. 2 days later, in the early evening, he slipped away. We washed and dressed his body and strapped his jaw with a tie he once wore. His false teeth were, for once, in their proper place. That night, my mother slept next to him, which I thought was brave. Next day, the two undertakers returned to the cottage. The worn plastic coffin was earth brown, used many times, always a different occupant. With no room for manoeuvre, it was passed up the stairway vertically and over the banister and onto the small landing. By reversing it into the bathroom, they were able to guide it into the waiting bedroom. It took a while, but we knew that my father would wait. He was in no hurry, nor were we, knowing of the route that lay before us. It was like a dress rehearsal in reverse, and we all careful to make notes. The coffin was an ingenious contraption. The undertakers, like magicians, unclipped the top and the sides from the base, which was then slid discreetly beneath my father as though not to disturb him. The sides and the lids were snapped back into place with a flourish, and he was lost to my view. For a while, anyway. We paused for a respectful moment, and then my mother, wishing to avoid embarrassment, took herself off to her garden, whilst my father began his final journey. We gingerly carried the coffin, now considerably heavier, into the bathroom to be turned and carried it across the landing to the landing rail. One end was placed on this, whilst the stronger of the men slowly made his way half down the stairs. We paused and surveyed our obstacle like climbers about to descend Everest. With unspoken agreement, the coffin was nudged forward to the point where it rested in the balance. The man on the stairs nodded, and we lifted the coffin and slid it over the rails towards the waiting hands. The rail leant, but held. We heard my father's body slide. Instinctively, we paused and listened. Reassured, we continued in silence with muted grunts and hasty hands to lower the coffin onto the first available step. In the narrow stairway, we gave assistance as best we could, but it was up to the lead man to turn the coffin and lower it from step to step as though in a waltz with an overweight partner. My father bounced and jolted around the corner until he reached the bottom step. We wriggled between door jamb and coffin and gently lifted my father onto the waiting trolley. We all breathed heavily. This particular mountain had been scaled, but we discreetly hid our sense of achievement as my father trundled along the narrow hallway to the waiting morning light. The long path to the cottage was made with cobblestones. These often presented a challenge even for the sure-footed. The undertakers had to cajole the trolley that bounced and lurched over the uneven path as though possessed by an unwilling spirit. The two men, their coattails flying, gripped the coffin like exorcists as they wrestled the apparent demonic all the way to the narrow gate. I remained by the front door and watched my father go, trying unsuccessfully to stifle my laughter. Eventually they reached their destination, and my father's coffin slid without resistance into the back of the patiently waiting hearse. The doors were firmly and finally closed. I knew the stronger man by sight. In a former life he used to drive a cattle truck, more familiar with living beasts than the dead. After the doors were closed, he stood panting and tucked in his shirt and wiped his brow. He must have felt my eyes or heard my laughter, which hopefully he mistook for grief. He turned and caught my gaze. He hastily restored his dampened handkerchief to his pocket and straightened his back. He looked up at me and shouted with reassurance, "Your father wasn't that difficult." I replied, "You didn't know my father."
Thank you, Nick. And next up we have a regular sham time.
Thanks, Bob. That was some workshop we had earlier. And Caroline was talking about weddings. It reminded me briefly of a text that was doing the rounds some time back. It went something like this. I hate weddings. My two grand-aunts, who used to nudge me in the ribs and say, you'll be next. They soon stopped that shit when I started doing the same to them at funeral. Time. I'm just going outside and maybe some time. We glance at one another in dismay. Nobody speaks. Dry-mouthed, I stare at the back door. In moments, our barman returns, rattling his bucket of ice. Windmills. 2 dozen strong, they glide our way. 2,000 feet, we dare not stall. Our thermals yet have further sway. 2 dozen strong, they still sashay. With onshore gusts, they face the bay. We soar beyond their beck and call. 2 dozen strong, they glide away. 2,000 feet, too swift to stall. Moments. Broken white lines pass under the fender. Each a split second, a winking cat eye. No time to ponder, past here and now. Kenmare. He met her at bridge in Kenmare. This lightkeeper knew solitaire. One gin on the rocks, she's loosening her locks, her flat had a circular stare. Prudence and the pen. On HSE policy, withhold bedpans from the elderly, poo-pooing the plan, an associate member of the junior chamber hissed, "That's just potty." The prize. Ding, 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 the spoon on a brandy glass. The murmur dies away. I now present, on behalf of our sponsors, Waterford Crystal, first place at this year's Juggler Convention goes to Cook's Northwest Passage. Cotton plateau, then peaks and slopes, puffed and fluffed on ephemeral plains, deserted. Icarus eye view, ice caps burnished, tawny, fractured and crusty. How long more can this last? The midnight blade hacks into a ledge to find purchase under the overhang. An avalanche of immense whiteness starts to crumble, then tumble in sweet silence, slipping down the sheer face, past stalactites, will-o'-the-wisps of froth, down frosted floes, to land across the mouth of the fjord, the wedge shape of attrition eating into those honeycombed caverns whose canyons, pale as egg white, down into blue glazed flats of Wedgwood, Baked Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Seamus. I just forgot to say in our announcement tonight that we really treasure our bar ladies, and we have a new one tonight, Jane, so let's welcome Jane here. And then the first one, to carry the donation jar around the place. Secrets. You don't have to do that, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. Next up, could we welcome Cassie's Chorus? Woo!
So my brother and I have been traveling around for a while, and he's just started introducing me to popular music, and I started reading a little bit, looking at some popular magazines, and this
I don't listen to the popular music, I make fun of it.
This is my kind of response. Pop culture is killing me. 2 weeks ago we'd never met, and now I know about Lil Wayne, Katy Perry, Keisha, and Bieber. The pulsing beats, useless lyrics, and bad acidness, along with gladiator sandals, skinny bodies, and unhealthy relationships. My brain cells are dying with each senseless puzzle piece dripping into my gray matter. Take me back to oblivion, before pop songs, before pop culture. No more word repetition and gyration. We were recently in South France, and we got to go to the Chateau d'If, which was really cool. The Chateau d'If is empty, the famous political prison, infamous for burying the living. Maybe the treasure of Marseille lies below the seedy rocks in the Chateau d'If, where prisoners lie salted away in a dungeon. Legendary prisoners, Edmond Dantès, not real. Protestants, communists, and the rhino, real. The Chateau d'If, the city is now full of immigrants, multilingual, and some religious even. What's France to do in a port town built for immigration and trade? So like us to build prisons, not possibilities.
Thank you, Cassie. Next up, Tina Fisker.
I think I've read this one before, but it's the only one I have with me, so I'll read it again. This is not a cigarette, she says, passing round the joint, over beer cans and empty wine bottles tossed by the party tide like boats abandoned in the bay beyond the coffee table shore. Smoke words drift above our heads, recumbent on cracked leatherette. We watch them fade and form and float away on a base wave out the door. This is not a cigarette, he says, handing me the joint, overflowing ashtrays, spilling beer and bottles into puddles of wine on the can-strewn floor. This is not a cigarette, I say, and pull hard on the joint. Lying back on leatherette, I exhale slow to make my point. The smoke words start to drift away. I stop the tide and make them stay. I hook 'em, reel 'em in, and own 'em. This is not a cigarette, I say. It's a late night party poem.
Want to pass the poem around there? Next up, Patricia Walsh.
Thank you, Paul. I'm in the same quandary as Tina, because I've sure read this poem before, but it's the only copy I have, so. This is called Email. I wish you were here. Terror and immorality now share the same house together. Next door, they'll see that we come to no harm. I wish you were here. Even-spirited, well-watched, with a hidden name in mind. Hidden away even from ourselves. I feel antisocial, crippled, weak. My wish has been granted at the wrong time, when the myth passed by with the weight of years. Books on the dressing table, I can consult them, and they make it sound so easy. It happened once you looked everywhere. I wish you were here. Terra and Emeraldi dropped by on the way to see if I'm all right. Next door. There's no fear of them coming to any harm. I wish you were here. Level-headed, steady-hearted, with boiling tears inside. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Next up, David Chalmers.
I'm going to read two quickish pieces. This first one has no title because it's part of a long sequence. I see the Valkyries in the purest velour, Adidas. All day I dream about Adidasler, and I walk between the drops of matchsticks in the pommeled wastage, whatever you're on yourself, whatever you're dreaming about now. Remember edges with sinister silking of Saturn days, melting in the dregs of well-imacked and shaving the peddlers of nightlight electric kings. Parsimonious wrecks who are waiting on the investigations into education, typically 1852 at 11 p.m. And I want my mooring rights. I want evidence of the boorish, elegant hooligans considered relevant in the dejection of the failure to understand the withering of a decade into a neat and incomplete narrative, foreclosure on elongation of millennial mitochondria. That I want only to express with shoes and sequins and sickening clouds of perfume nicked from the columns of G2, along with music and the dubbed step and the legit examinations of coffee stations and what dancing was done without drug-induced symphonies. I can't wait to hear circuitry cry. This is called... Well, this isn't... I didn't come up with this. This is called Quartet for the End of Time. It's a... quartet piece that was composed by Olivier Messiaen while he was a POW in France, and it's kind of modernist, minimalist kind of piece, and I did poems for each of the four instruments in the quartet, and so this is the clarinet piece. I flicker, the clipped pattern that crystalline flitters. I speak in broken tongue, coming at the end of time. From away, the movement, vocalism, scripted fragments, didactic, habitual cornerstone. The breaking of bondment, the strict machine of measurement and the end of time, implicit, accompli. Sad, weary birdsong, solo, the self-aware, abyssing, crawl through and the end of time. Eternal regiments, solacing the encampment of a blackness, a darkened heart. Recoil, recollect, as master and conductor tells breakment and the intercept. In the free espousal of the thing, ornately the ology and the end of time, encamp themselves, shelf them for resale in the exchange. In a brain waving, the crushing limit, the garrulous stone-fed arcing music, stone solid furiously across with the music of and the end of time inclusive. A blessing of the coloured amongst a grey, an abeyance to the cycle, and a pattern in the sword of fire and the end of time. This is my quietude. In the face and the end of time. Thank you.
Thank you, David. We've come to the last reader for tonight. So if there's anyone who isn't on here who would like to say hello, now's your last chance. Yep, yes, sir. Yep.
What's your name there?
Niall.
Niall.
Niall, come up and say hello.
Somewhere in the middle there's a door, and no one knows exactly what it's for. No one's been and seen the other side, and if somebody said they did, they lied.
Thank you, Noel. Anyone else who would like to say a last minute poem? For Mr. Alan Tiffany, he takes the night away.
Hey!
Thank you, Paul. Like others earlier tonight, you've heard this before, at least I read it here before, it doesn't mean you heard it. And anyway, it's worth reading as you've been missing most of the illusions anyway. It's a translation from the Irish. I'll read some of the Irish first poem that some people learned in school, Una Vaughan, which is a big love poem from the 18th century. And it's actually quite stupid. The two lovers were quite stupid. And I have no pity for them, and the tune is bad. But they had a bit of fun with it anyway. They were from the noble families of County Roscommon, and we never knew there were noble families in County Roscommon, so that's what we knew. So this all goes in Irish, and I'll say a bit about the translation. Una von. A uni clé de hir de nur hir tash, ning lasu clan as a chrevo traum we das, da vaiti spreil at hir boos chul vilach, da hu fein ag ag shir da dur vilat. A una chara a chalten an ina soek, is tu sa chadra da vaka me riva tua, de vegin tana is lasu an gire grua, is buon me janart is ni racha me chile kuit. Da mellchis ag on gudu kusa graf an fein, Then got vol of a stopple and boss medeal. A fearland rolling heel hochma is oil and ain, barnum a hovel at the vogus no lawyer day. Is galna cosset a rocher and day de luish, is a vaki a horin a hochsa, nor fearch of an rouge. A key on noch the verd solace and grain or douche, as beach or umsa, gumulish in fain, a clue. I try to translate it literally. And they're called literally White Winifred. And if you translate a poem literally, strange and funny things happen. As literally as you could make it. So if something's a bit weird, it's meant to be. Winifred, my chest, or branch of the fresh wet paps, of the great squint eyes of the heavy haired yellow tress, if they gave me 100 cows and 5,000 horse, I'd love you more than jewels and shares, I guess. O friendly Winnie, you child of the clappy, happy people, you were the most silver, slick-tongued of all your peers. You light my fire and rouge the russet on my cheek. My love is stuck in you for now, for the coming years. If I knew you loved me truly, deeply, madly, only I praise you till death stuffed up my gob. You pearl of red Christ and lovely profile, I'd rather sleep with you than lie with God. Bright are the legs that the key of the fresh tooth has, and two pink breasts of her chest never tested in lust. Her skin bears shanks that give light to the sun back then. She needs no singing, but I will praise her first. O White Winnie, I love none but you. Come boldly, you plank of forehead fresh. You are the finest of hair, both front and back, standing there shiftless in your pelt of flesh. O sweet Winnie, you most certainly are the prize. From the age of a child, you were reared as a toy to play. Conceived from the twig of a branch of an unstale tree, or flower of wheat, you have readied my face for the clay. O Winnie, my secret, you have screwed up my head. O Winnie, my ruin, you have come between God and me. O Winnie, my loss, you perfumed perm of all corals. If my eyes had been gouged out, your beauty they'd never have seen. Yes, Winnie, you flower of the amber curls, you have died from advice that was untimely cruel. Look, my love, which of these voices was best? You a bird in a cage, or me in the ford of the fools.